You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
It's just me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ground Zero Growth. I'm joined today with my guest and good friend, George Commons, managing partner at Barnabas Group KC. How are you doing today, George?
I'm doing great, Sam. Great to be on this podcast, and thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. I think we're going to have to start with Barnabas. And if I can, normally I just ask you to introduce Barnabas, but if I can kind of steal the mic for a second. Friend of mine introduced me to, we met at a group and he introduced me to Barnabas, and that something about that room, I'm going to be honest, between business and faith coming together, and it was very inspiring, I think is the word I'm going to use. And it's probably doesn't quite do it justice for me, just seeing all these different business entrepreneurs, business professionals coming together in a room to support the community and the ministry and the different ministries that came through and presented the work that they're doing. It was a really good thing. And I think I came in on like the year banquet thing. So I got to see the positive impact that had been had over the course of the year. And so for starters, I wanted to thank you for that. And then the other thing was, you have just an amazing smile, George, an amazing smile and upbeat demeanor in such a way that like just invites you in, you know?
Well, you mentioned Barnabas Group, which nothing gives me greater joy than that. And that's what brings a smile to my face when anyone talks about it, especially anyone who's been there. The reaction you've had, I hear over and over. And every time I hear it, it just tickles my spirit. I love it. So thank you for coming and thank you for sharing that.
So can you kind of explain for the audience? I probably didn't do it a full justice, but what is Barnabas Group? If you were to kind of distill it into a why should people plug in and
yeah,
you know, what's the elevator pitch, I guess?
Sure. The Barnabas Group is a ministry to ministries. It's comprised of Christian business people who realize God has a call on their life and a plan for their life. They have, as business people, we all have gifts of strategy, vision, planning, engineering, business development, and we have a desire to use those skills for God as well. We use them in the business, but where can I use those for God? God created me as a networker, as an engineer, as a marketer, as a planner, as a visionary. Where do I get to do that for God? That's why the Barnabas Group exists. We create opportunities, create a space where people can learn about opportunities where they can do exactly that, and connect with other professionals like you that feel the same way. So they come, they get excited, like, yeah, this is why God made me. I really do have a purpose, and I can use it to impact millions of people. So that's why people are excited. It's a fun, high-energy, dynamic, fast-paced environment. Been described as like a Christian version of Shark Tank, where we're there to invest, not invest money, but invest something even more valuable, our time and our experience and our talents. So, it's amazing. Something unexpected, a God thing happens every time we meet. And God's used it to touch many lives here in Kansas City. And I'm in awe of all he's doing. I just stand back and watch him work and rejoice in it.
So I'm realizing my questions tend to be a little bit sporadic and I feel a pivot coming on. So normally right about now, we rewind you back to the high school period and we kind of follow your career track. But I feel a need for a change in this moment with regards to Barnabas Group. And I'd like to invite you to kind of give your testimony, because that's the first thing that really comes to my mind from a question. Like, were you raised in the church? Tell me about your faith journey, please.
Sure. I mean, I was raised in the church. We didn't go very often, but I had a reverence for God. I didn't really have a deep knowledge of the Bible or understanding what God's plan for our lives was. So I went to college as an learned engineering. So my first job out of college was a engineer at AT&T Bell Labs. I was in the telecommunications space. And at work there, they had a workplace noontime Bible study. I always wanted to learn more about the Bible, so I signed up and went. And there, I really got a detailed knowledge, understanding of the Bible, God's plan for salvation, how Christ died for us, for salvation and atonement through his sacrifice. And shortly thereafter, accepted him as my Lord and Savior. Kept going to the Bible study, growing in the Lord. And about 2 years after that, I was like, I really want to honor God with my life. I need to quit my job and go to Bible college and become a pastor, because if you really want to serve God, you have to be a pastor. So I went to talk to my pastor, and he said, well, yes, you could do that, but you really don't need to. You're already trained as an engineer. Why don't you just stay there, serve God where you're at, and later in life, other opportunities will open up for you. So I did that, and we had something at work called the AT&T Christian Fellowship, which I eventually became the president of. We were almost like a church inside a corporation where I worked, and this is where we lived in Illinois. When we lived in Illinois, we had five buildings on an R&D campus, about 5,000 employees, and our group was about 700 of those employees. We would have Bible studies in every building, prayer meetings, show films in the auditorium at lunchtime. We were almost like a church inside a corporation. It's kind of a neat experience. We had a lot of good impact. We helped people and did some neat things. So that was my early Christian experience.
You don't hear about this a lot. You know, a Bible study at a corporate or like AT&T Bell Labs. Is this something, I mean, on one hand, I don't see why not. Do you think this is still a relatively common thing? Do you think that was a bit of an oddity? Is that something AT&T helped foster?
I don't think it's as common. I think part of that is government policy, social correctness, right? Corporations, large businesses, didn't give employees as much freedom as far as expressing their faith in a workplace as they did back then. This was in the, you know, early 80s I'm talking about. So I think that's what's, at least for large corporations, perhaps squelch it. I think smaller businesses, perhaps owned by someone strong in the Christian faith, probably would, you know, give the employees that freedom. But it's in a larger corporation. So that's what I think the pushback is or concern. Even back then, we faced, outside persecution pressure. We had to consult like the Whitehead Institute and other legal sources for, you know, what did the law say at the time? What were we allowed to do and not allowed to do?
That's interesting. I would like to talk about, so when I first came back to and decided to get serious about the faith, I had kind of a very similar thing mentally where it was like, you know, I got to quit, I got to give it. Well, and it happened for me after having started my business. So I was over here like, oh, shoot, am I going to have to, I got to fold up the business. I got to become a missionary. I got to go overseas. You know, and I'm fortunate. I have a moment to shout out and I think I'm going to take the opportunity. So
go
Lucas, who is a member of the Barnabas Group, Lucas Singala, the owner of Watchmen. I think it was definitely a God thing. I had the opportunity to kind of enter his orbit, and he and I ended up in a one-on-one. And I, you know, he's outspoken in his faith, and you could tell a very strong individual in general. And so we ended up in a one-on-one shortly after. And I think, you know, Lucas was rightfully so. He's like, why are we here? And so I just threw it out for him. I said, you know what, Lucas, I could tell you're strong in your faith. You own a good, strong business. And here's what's going on. And I'm trying to decide what I do. And he ended up offering a lot of books up, one of them being Anointed for Business. And when you started talking by Ed Silvoso, and when you started
one
talking
of my
about,
favorite reads. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, all right. So, sorry, I've set the stage here for the question, which is, where does that come from? And is that biblical, that concept that we just need to, we, you know, let's go out into the wilderness and start eating locusts because we're Christian now?
Well, first of all, Lucas Ngal is a dear friend of mine. I could say for you, hanging out with him is dangerous. I gotta be careful. But no, I really appreciate Lucas. And he's a great leader, great business leader, great man of the faith. And I just appreciate him so much. Yeah, I think, you know, Anointed for Business, books like that, they're kind of open our minds to the world of possibilities. And you really do, I think, need to have that open perspective to allow the Holy Spirit to really speak to us as business leaders. And how does God want to use us? We're all uniquely and wonderfully made. God has a unique and wonderful plan for each of our lives. And we're going to be held accountable to that before God, right? I'm surprised how few believers read or understand 1 Corinthians 3. And I rarely hear it preached about, but, you know, our works will be tested by fire. That was when I was in that Bible study at AT&T Bell Labs. I'll never forget the day a guy came in, Bible study, had a dream that night, and it was that verse. He said, yeah, I dreamed I was in heaven, and there was a pile of stuff in me, and I was standing before Jesus, and fire was put to it, and there was nothing left, and it all burned up. And this verse became very real to him. And him sharing that story, it became very real to me. I mean, that was over 40 years ago. I can still remember it like it was yesterday. I can still picture being in that meeting room and what it looked like and him sharing that story. And God made that verse very real to me that day. And that became my life verse. But yeah, books like Ed's help us to kind of really open our eyes to how God wants to use and what's the realm of the possible for us as Christians in business.
So let's talk more about that verse then. So 1 Corinthians 1:3, and let's just, I mean, you know, frankly, I feel like I'm supposed to have that one memorized with how you talk about it. And yet I'll feign as much ignorance. So what, but that verse sounds like it's very real to you. So what, I mean, I'll pull it up if I need to. And
1 Corinthians 3:12, it talks about the foundation in Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. So I think the key thing for all of us in business, you know, we all have our plans, we're all striving to achieve. But one of the things I learned from my spiritual mentor, who's probably impacted my life more than anyone, Bob Shank, a guy who happens to be the co-founder of the Barnabas Group, you really need to have an eternal perspective. You really need to focus on significance and things that are really going to matter in life. And where are we spending our time? Too often, we spend our time producing wood, hay, and stubble. We should be trying to say, how much margin and time can I carve out to create jewels and precious stones that are going to survive the fire that I can lay at the feet of Jesus when I see him? Right? I don't want to be empty-handed on that day. I don't want to have my entire life go up in vapors with nothing to show for it. So, you know, in this society, we're all in, even more so with social media and every book and every podcast and every article. Yeah, you got to do this, this trend, this fad, this technique, this latest whatever. Got to be learning that. Got to be adopting that. Got to be. But wait a minute. Pause. Take a breath. Let's think about eternity for a minute. We've got a call. We have an assignment. What are we doing about that? So, yeah, that there's a lot in that verse. I'm just continuing to be amazed. I've been a Christian over 40 years. I only heard that a sermon around that verse once, and it was preached by a friend of mine at his dad's funeral, and that was it. I don't know, but it's in my Bible. Assume it's in everybody else's.
So there's a lot there. You seem to have some opinions, some thoughts then, and rightfully so. How do entrepreneurs and business owners carve out that margin for the jewels? And what do the jewels look like? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's kind of distill it into and catch someone that needs to start an action plan, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. So let's start it again. I'm indebted to Bob Shank. He recently wrote a devotional about this, borrowing from some of his thoughts. He talks about, like, there's three tiers in life that we go through in the workforce. The first is kind of survival, right? We gotta earn enough to pay all the bills and pay the mortgage or whatever it is that's in our budget, right? So the first layer of our work lives and career is all focused on how can I get there, right? And then the next step up is success, right? I want to get promoted. I want to move up the chain, up the ladder, go into management, more, you know, bigger, better, build a bigger, better business. That's fine, right? And a few make it from the survival into the success realm. But at the top, and if you think of this as a pyramid, right, there's a lot of people at the survival realm level. There's a few at the success level. But at the top, the pyramid is significance. So success is something that's achieved, but significance is only something that can be pursued. And it's up to us, right? Success, you know, people, we can claim success and we get rewarded by being taxed. But the only measure of significance is the one that matters for eternity, that will be determined by Jesus on the threshold of eternity. And that 1 Corinthians 3 is that big test. You know, did we live a life of significance, or were we only focused on survival and success?
So are you, okay, this is, because this is the first thing, are you familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the first thought that come to mind. And it's very relevant, too, from a missionary perspective, right? One of the first things that a lot of folks focus on is food and water and shelter. Because, I mean, without that, most folks can't really, you know, for lack of any better word, they're not, it's hard to think about eternity when you're struggling to make it into tomorrow.
Right.
So, yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. So tell me about, so you're indicating essentially that, you know, obviously the first rung, you're just, you know, you got to get the bills paid, right? And then the second rung, if in a pyramid scenario, a lot of entrepreneurs' businesses make it into, but maybe that's where they stall. And yeah, that's the big concern.
That becomes their life. You know, they're consumed with that. Nothing wrong with that. Success, just don't let it consume you. In fact, Bob Shank, again, he was the CEO of a large construction company, and his role or his focus was working himself out of a job. So he built a team around him that he could trust and train up people of high character, high integrity, and mentored them to take over various aspects of his role, which freed up margins so he could do ministry. And then he ultimately ended up, you know, they sold the company, had good people running it. He could sell the company and he could just go do ministry full time. And that's what launched his ministry. So, yeah.
So you were talking about your faith-based journey and the work with AT&T Bell, and you're progressing along, and you know, hey, I need to leave and go into the ministry, and you've had a pastor that almost sounds like kind of does something similar to Lucas at the time that says, well, you could do that, but you don't necessarily have to. And so that kind of keeps you on the course. Let's pick it up from there. What has God for you from there, and what ultimately brings you into the Barnabas Group?
Well, again, that pastor said, well, later in life, other opportunities will open up for you. And it was kind of an interesting statement he made at the time. So later in life, and this was probably 15 years later, a friend of mine told me about a group of people were planning to start a Barnabas Group chapter in Chicago. The Barnabas Group itself started 25 years ago in California. So they asked me if I wanted to be a part of it, to be on the founding board to launch that chapter. And I didn't really know much about it, but definitely had this yearn in my soul to want to do more for God that never left me from my early days of salvation. I said, yeah, sounds good. I want to be a part of this. So grateful to a friend, just like Lucas told you about Barnabas Group. A friend of mine told me about Barnabas Group, got me involved. I'm eternally grateful to that dear friend named Pat Brady. And we were off and running. We started a chapter from the ground up. It was a great experience. And I served on the board there for 15 years or more until I moved to Kansas City. And had some great experiences, you know, as a part of the Barnabas Group along the way. And got me very excited about it. And I, every year I get more and more excited about what we're doing in our chapter, but as a movement across all the chapters. So it's just powerful. When you bring business insights and strategy with ministry passion, it's a very powerful combination, and we see it over and over again.
That's cool. I've actually got to give Su Young Cha, I also interviewed him on the another, credit for
another great guy, another dear friend of mine. Yeah, really like Su Young.
For sure.
Yeah.
So tell me about, as you're going through the path, as you're going through the course, can you tell me about how you found, can you give an example or cut or two of how you found being able to discernment in like, what is the choice? Which choice is God and which is my own fancy? You know, it seems like that's kind of the, cause you have these opportunities and the pastor, this is kind of what made me think of it. You know, the Lord will present opportunities in the future. How are we to know which ones are him, which ones are our own mind, or which ones are an enemy?
Yeah, I would say there's probably several ways to kind of discern that. And I'm sure, you know, I've missed it at times. People miss it at times. Obviously, the Bible says that the peace of the Holy Spirit will guide you. So do you have a peace from the Holy Spirit in a situation? Or do you have a check or hesitancy about a situation? Normally, you know, if God's in it, there's peace. If you get a check or a hesitation or something just doesn't sit right, that's probably a sign that either it's a no or at least pause and step back and evaluate. So that would be one. I had a situation when we moved to Kansas City. I had the idea to start a chapter of the Barnabas Group. And, you know, being a business guy and visionary, like, okay, let's go. I'm here. Let's do this. And I'm praying, and I realized I had asked God if it was his idea. I know it was George's idea, but it's like, wait a minute. Does God really want me to do this? So I said, God, I'm in prayer. I said, God, I'm sorry. I want to make sure this is your idea. Because that was a big, it would have been a big commitment to try to launch it. And I want to make sure it was something God needed and wanted. There's lots of churches, lots of ministries in the world. And I just want to make sure, did God want yet another one? And had a plan for it. So I said, God, I felt led to pray, if this is of you, would you confirm the vision for through two individuals who would affirm it and want to be a part of it? You know, you're probably in a situation where you're going to friends and like, oh, I'm thinking of this, you know, I'm trying to see if God's in it. And your friend says, oh yeah, that sounds great, Sam, pat you on the back and I wish you all the best. I'll be praying for you. Okay. That's easy for some, easier, certainly for somebody to do. But somebody say, yes, Sam, I think that's great. And I'm going to come in alongside you and do it with you. Right. That's a bigger yes. So that I was asking for that bigger yes. I said, God, I want someone to really affirm the vision and be, you know, willing to be a part of it. So I'm getting ready to leave Chicago, going to my last Barnabas meeting before we pack up the moving truck and head out to Kansas City. And I ran into a guy I knew. He was a missionary in Pakistan, but also missionary residence at the church we attend in Chicago. So he, when he wasn't on the field, he stayed at the house on our church property. But then he had come off the missions field to launch some new ministries here in the U.S., and his new residence was in Springfield, Missouri. But he happened to be in Chicago the day of the last Barnabas meeting I was at, and happened to come to the Barnabas meeting. Runs into me and says, George, what's up with you? And I said, well, actually, I'm getting ready to move to Kansas City, and I'm praying about starting a chapter of the Barnabas group. He thinks for a minute, and he looks at me and said, George, I think God is in that. I want to affirm that, and I'm going to come up from Springfield and help you build it. And he's now a member of our board. He comes up from Springfield, almost all of our meetings, and is a dear friend. So that was confirmation number one. Then we land in Kansas City. Didn't know anybody in Kansas City other than my kids and my cousin and one friend of ours from Illinois, a couple. So I was told that I should go meet a guy named Rick Box. Rick heads up a great faith at work ministry based in Overland Park called the Unconventional Business Network, worldwide ministry. I was told to meet him by another good friend of mine, Jimmy Dodd, who leads another great ministry called Pastor Serve. So I looked Rick up online on Conventional Business Network, saw they're having their annual conference, Overland Park Convention Center. This is like 2 months after I landed in Kansas City. So I go and I see Rick standing by the book table during the break. I went up to him, said hi, and told him, moved here from Chicago, thinking about praying about starting a Barnabas group chapter. Rick looks at me and says, oh, you're the guy they sent? I've been waiting for you. I said, excuse me? He said, yeah, I was out in California. I met the founders of the Barnabas group. I went to a meeting, and I really thought there needed to be a chapter in Kansas City, and I asked him to send someone. And that was over 5 years ago, and I've been waiting. I said, Rick, that's news to me. I know those guys had never mentioned anything, but here I am, and this is my prayer. And Rick says, I'm all in. Whatever I can do to help you, I want to help you build this. So Rick and his wife become very dear friends of ours. He very graciously has sponsored our ministry. We sponsor his ministry. He's at just about all of our events. We're at all of their events. We have very complimentary organizations. But so I went home that day. I said, okay, God, you answered my prayer. I don't know how you're going to do this because I still had a day job. I was at that time a vice president of global sales for business partner development for a $1 billion software business in the AI and IT automation space. And it's like, okay, you answered my prayer. I want to be faithful to that. I don't know anybody. I've got a day job, but how could I create some margin to try to serve you in this? So that's probably the most strongest confirmation experience. So the combination of sometimes it's that still small voice, sometimes through it's a friend, through a Bible verse that speaks to you, or in some cases, you know, you ask an explicit prayer and God gives you an explicit answer.
That's beautiful. And that's what you mean by creating margin, ultimately.
Well, creating margin, I think, is, you know, how do we steward our time? You know, the Bible talks a lot about stewardship. Too often we think about stewardship as what do we do with our finances. Stewardship's really about what do we do with everything God's given us. Time is the most valuable thing he's given us. As business people, he's also given us experience and talent and a network of contacts. What do we do with those? How do we steward those? Right? So how can we create margin and what do we do with it? Right? Are we going to go play golf? Are we going to watch a lot of TV? Not that those things are bad, but again, in the context of wood, hay, and stubble versus precious jewels, you know, as we build out our calendar for the week, can we set aside some time for God, for eternity, and plan that out as we're doing our time management with whatever process you want to use? I think it's comes down to a conscious decision. Where can you mine out time? I spent, while I was a VP of sales for his company, I put in several thousand hours over a number of several years building the Barnabas Group as a volunteer. You had to create a margin to do, you know, before work, lunchtime, after work, weekends, evening. Where can you create some margin to try to do this? If God calls you to do something, it's probably going to take a little bit of sacrifice and creativity, but in the long run, it's worth it, right?
Right. I find it fascinating that the parable of the talents, that's what the translation comes out to, is the term talents. Yep. And I'll be honest, I've yet to fully research it. It's been on my agenda to do, but I'm over here like, what are the odds that the translation comes out to talents?
Yep.
And that the whole verse is about maximizing the talents.
Yep. Yep. And to whom much is given, much is expected. Right. And how much do we, as leaders, as business leaders, right? Maybe we're on that second pyramid of tier of the pyramid in success. Perhaps more is expected of us in terms of the kingdom, right? Because as leaders, we're proven strategic thinkers, visionaries, perhaps leaders of teams, caring about people. God has blessed us. God has raised us up to a position of leadership. What are we doing with that? How are we using and stewarding that? Yeah. Well, the thing that grieves my heart more than anyway, I talk to a lot of business people. I'm blessed to know over 300 of them in the Barnabas Group, Kansas City, an amazing group. But sometimes I, you know, people say, I'm just too busy to do anything for God. You know, I understand that. I don't want to judge anybody, but my heart aches when I hear people say that. And I just can't imagine, you know, how does God feel about that? I think we have to steward this time thing carefully. It's too easy, right? There's way too many temptations to suck us into using our time for something other than the kingdom. So we have to, you know, the Bible says guard your heart. And there's a lot of guarding our heart in a lot of different ways, but perhaps guarding our heart and where we use our time, what do we put our heart into from a time perspective? We also need to guard that.
One thing I've definitely noticed in business, for me, every time I try to come up with a general rule of thumb, I find some sort of like opposite scenario, you know, and I always kind of come back to narrow is the path, I guess, because it definitely seems like a balancing beam. So for example, you know, fine margin and to much given, much expected. I agree wholeheartedly, but I'll also say, like, almost to kind of give a flip coin reverse of that, I've definitely noticed that you want to give as much as possible, but not everyone and everything, and I don't want to say is worthy of your time, because that's not, I think that's an arrogant statement, but they're definitely, a better way of putting it, and a way that I've heard put it before is, you know, is the soil good for planting, right? And so not every plot of land, not every scenario is good for planting. And you want to get the most return, not just for yourself, but for the kingdom, for those around you. And you want to give generously. But again, kind of the flip side and the balance that I find is to what? Because there was a time when I gave more freely. And it's not that I'm withholding now. It's just that within the years and the time, I've noticed more and more that there's only certain things I don't know. How do I explain it? I mean, do you see what I'm getting at? Does it make sense? And it comes back to the discernment thing. And so that's why I guess I'm asking, like, how do we balance that?
That's a great question. And again, I'll refer back to my mentor, Bob Shank. Two things I learned from him. One is this whole notion of calling convergence. I think it's so important for us as business leaders to understand that. And calling convergence is kind of the intersection of our marketplace skills, our spiritual gifts, and our life experience. So for me, my marketplace skills, I was primarily a partnership developer, business developer guy. Yeah, I started as an engineer, but went into management and then went into partnership development. That's a podcast in itself, but that's where I spent the bulk of my years in the workforce. My spiritual gifts are servant and encourager. And, and those are the intersection of your top strengths and strength finders. So my top strength is connectedness. So the intersection of that, and where do I find that? Well, I find great joy in connecting Christian business leader to ministry, ministry to ministry, and Christian business leader to Christian business leader for the sake of helping a ministry or advancing a ministry. That's my sweet spot, my calling convergence. And, you know, what separates a really good baseball player from a not-so-good baseball player? I think one of the things is they really are dialed in on that sweet spot. They know what pitch to swing at and which ones not to swing at. And we're going to get thrown a lot of opportunities, especially, you know, as Christian lovers and servants of God, there's plenty of things for us to do, right? Anything from working in a nursery, being a greeter, being a parking lot attendant, to deacon, elder, missionary, anything in between, right? What do we swing at? I want to serve God. What do we swing at? So I think it's to understand our calling convergence. And then the other thing I learned from Bob is, he said, you know, he talked about God's unique design, and the Bible says we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And if you really look at how unique every individual is and take some time studying that, you'll realize there's this, if you look at your spiritual giftedness and your strengths and maybe one of the factors, there's maybe at most one other Christian in America that's got the same strengths in the same order. It's in gifts as you do. So it's part of our uniqueness. So one of the things Bob said once that I'll never forget, if you're doing a job, kingdom assignment, or maybe even in the workplace, and you look around and you see it's a job that somebody else around you could be doing, it's probably not the right job for you. You need to be doing, because we are uniquely designed with God. Our goal should be in a unique role that no one else around us can do, that's tapping in on our unique strengths. So I use those two things, kind of the calling convergence and our uniqueness of our design. Those are the things, that's a pretty narrow filter. And that's how I evaluate. So when a spiritual kingdom opportunity comes at me, first do I have the bandwidth, right? But does it pass through that filter? If it does, then I'll give it more prayerful consideration. But it's kind of like dialing in on a microscope, right? You start out, things are blurry, and you dial in and it gets clearer and clearer. I think as we grow in the Lord, that's what we have to grow in, right? As we understand our calling and our unique design and how our calling convergence and our work experience comes together, that will help us filter those opportunities. Mm.
Well, it's fascinating because what you're describing from a business perspective, right, is a set of core values and a why that you filter everything through, your next hire, your next initiative, what is it we're doing? So in the same sort of way, you're describing, you know, business, spiritual, not just core values, but strengths that yep. you're using to filter spiritual opportunities through,
yeah.
essentially, to find out which are meant for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the same applies in business. I work with a lot of companies that we had business partner relationships over the years. And the most successful partners were the ones who stayed in their lane. They knew what they were really good at, and they just stayed true to that. And they didn't try to go wider than that because it wasn't their focus, it wasn't what they were good at. And all the ones that tried to go wider and just kind of grasping at other things, they ultimately failed. And I think that's perhaps the key to business success as well. Know your niche, know your lane, whether in business or in the kingdom, and stay true to that.
So let's talk about the discovery process to that, right? Let's talk about that new green, you know, from a business perspective, it's like, what is my niche? From a ministry perspective, it's what brings me joy? What brings me energy? What is it that I'm built for? What was kind of your process? So, you know, you mentioned StrengthsFinder. What's that? The Clifton test or whatever.
Right.
How did you, are there some bullets you can give me that brought you to where you're at now, where it sounds like you have a pretty in-depth filter?
Well, first of all, I'd say it's a journey, right? It's not, you're not going to wake up one day, you're going to have it all figured out. Another famous Christian business leader, a guy named Bob Buford, wrote the book Halftime, which a lot of folks are familiar with. It sold over 700,000 copies. And the tagline to Halftime is, my journey from success to significance. And Bob Buford built a very large media company, but he realized in the sphere of eternity that wasn't going to matter. And he pivoted and became very intentional in trying to steward all of his talents and experience for the kingdom. That light bulb moment for him was this halftime moment. That's kind of what the genesis of the book is about. It's a journey. But one of the things Bob Buford talks about in that book is launch trial probes. You know, dip your toes in some water, right? You try some things. Is this a fit? Is this not a fit? Is this bringing me joy? What am I learning from this? And like I said, it's like dialing in on that microscope. Use the trial probe process to get further insight as to where your unique calling and gifting lies. And the Barnabas Group, again, it's a great vehicle. That's part of design. It makes it easy for people to launch trial probes, try to get to know some ministries, get to try a couple opportunities. And they can be very small things, you know, spend an hour working with somebody, offering them some counsel on a topic. Doesn't have to be big things, but over time, that'll become clearer.
So tell me about a time when we're going to go a slightly different direction here, right? I want to hear about a difficulty. I want to hear about a time when discernment wasn't so clear, you know, a time when, because, you know, you're describing a world where, you know, it's, and maybe you haven't, I don't know, maybe it's always been so easy as, you know, Lord, I'd love for double confirmation here. And then the confirmation just came. I kind of want to hear about the silence in between, right? And a moment when you're like, well, I got to make a call. And so this is the one I'm making. And then you find out later, it's like, well, it wasn't the call. Should I have prayed harder? I don't, you know?
Yeah. I don't have a really great example to give you off the top of my head, but I would say there'll be a few times, even in ministry, right? I started the Barnabas Group Kansas City as a volunteer, did that for 3 to 4 years. And then we grew to the point we needed a full-time leader. Some discussion at the board, we felt, well, it's time. So I literally, you know, retired on a Friday and the following Monday became a ministry leader. So that was why I had a 2-day break between from one to the other. But even as a ministry leader, there's bumps in the road, right? There have been meetings where I just threw everything into a meeting and thought, you know, we're going to have all these great outcomes. And I had emotionally built myself up to a level of expectation. And then things didn't go the way I thought. And the next morning I was so defeated and deflated. And I realized, you know, I got ahead of God and I would put too much of my own strength into it and too much of my own expectation, hadn't really yielded and surrendered that to God. So I would say the times that I missed God in life the most have been just in my zeal and my passion, getting ahead of him. You know, Bible says, be still and know that I am God. So I think for me and maybe for other leaders in business, waiting is really hard to do, right? We're not we're called to lead. We're called to charge ahead, right? So I'd say those would be the times, just learning to rest in him, wait on his timing. That's hardest. And when I've missed it, that's most often the reason why.
You know, something I've been thinking about recently, just along those lines, is control is an interesting concept, right? Because it's ultimately a lie. And the wildest thing about the lie is you almost wake up to the realization that you'd been believing it for the last weeks, months, heaven forbid, years. And you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I bought into the lie again. Because we never had it. You can buy into it all you want. You can try and, but at the end of the day, even if you don't believe in a sovereign God, the notion that we have control of the circumstances around us, to include natural disasters, is just rather ludicrous. And so,
yep.
How do you, well, I guess let's, that's the next question.
You keep throwing these curveballs.
How are you making sure you haven't, bought into that lie? You know, in this moment, how are you checking yourself regularly that you haven't bought into the lie of control? And because you gave a great example of, you know, maybe it was the Lord's plan, but I got a little bit ahead of it emotionally. Mm-hmm. And that comes back to control.
Sam, you keep throwing these tough curveballs at me. You should have been a pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, man. You got a nasty curveball. you know, I think that's where being accountable and having a couple believers in your life that you can be open and real and transparent with, right? So those would be vulnerable moments to admit that. So that's where we need that, right? We need that accountability. That's why we have board of directors of our ministry organizations. That's why we have pastors and people in our lives and elders and overseers. You know, the Bible just talks a lot about relationship. And I think, again, in our society, right, relationships take time. And let's face it, we're not in a slow down, take time world. We're in a microwave, 1 minute, social media, quick text. I mean, people don't even have time to talk anymore. All they could do is text, right? Talking takes too much time. So I think that opens all of us up to,
man, if you're an entrepreneur, it's even worse.
Yeah,
it's even worse.
That opens
a whole hour long meeting. That better be a high value mm-hmm. meeting.
Yeah. So, I think that just that busyness opens us up to be more vulnerable to falling into a lie from the enemy. And, we need that time. We need people around us. So, yep.
Good. All right, so potentially another curveball, but one I had already planned. We talked about it a little bit beforehand, so I really want to pull you on this one. So, my rediscovery of the faith last few years and me being more open about it and what's going on, I've noticed that there's a lot more high productivity, high net worth value, whatever you want to call it, entrepreneurs and business owners than I expected that do adopt, you know, maybe among a different sect or faith or label, but they all seem to be very faith-centered in some form or fashion. Can you help me understand that? Like, have you seen even more of that? I would like to hear your thoughts on that. Because frankly, for me, that was, I guess, unexpected. I didn't quite expect to see that.
Yeah, I've got a two-part answer to that. I mean, first of all, the Bible has a lot of great wisdom that very much applies to a business context, right? How do we treat our employees? How do we run our business, our ethics, our integrity, you know, vision, planning? There's a lot of great insight in scripture. So absolutely. And organizations like the Unconventional Business Network help elaborate and expound on those principles and how business people apply them. That's first and foremost. But I think God is raising up. If you look at what's going on in the earth or in certainly North America today, the Christian business leader segment is rising up. I mean, we're seeing it in the Barnabas Group, other faith at work organizations are seeing it. And You know, the late Dr. Billy Graham said at the end of his life, he thought the next move of God was going to be through the marketplace. And I think that's the era we're stepping into. I mean, unfortunately, the facts are the church in North America is in decline. More and more people outside the church don't see the church as relevant. I saw a survey the other day that people have more trust in business than they do in church. That's unfortunately not a good situation, but that's what the surveys say. So I think the mantle in this hour, and I think it's a God thing, the Christian business leaders are raising up to say, how can we bring God in a, you know, every aspect of our lives? How can we transform America, right? How can we really solve big problems? I mean, the business people I talked to in the Barnabas Group, they look around our city. We're fourth worst in the country for human trafficking. We're number one per capita in homelessness. We have a problem with childhood reading, violence among young people. You look around, you see the foster care system is broken. And the government, more and more, they're throwing up their hands saying, you know, we can't solve these problems. There isn't enough money that we could throw at this to try to solve these. So what is the mantle? The mantle left in the church, I think, is the last great hope. But the
number one per capita in homelessness?
Yeah.
But, America?
Yeah. But the traditional church is not, for the most part, there are a few that are, but most churches are not really focused on meeting the external need in our community. But I'm stirred, and I've talked to some pastors through the way. You look at the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? Who are the ones who are the ones who passed on the other side of the road, right? The priests, right? But God said, you know, the Samaritan who met the need was the faithful one. So I think business people, the ones that they're like, hey, there's a lot that's broken in society. And we as business, Christian business leaders, we can be part of the answer in a God-honoring way. And more I see that being raised up. There's city transformation movements being raised up in a number of cities across the country. Started at business people are at the forefront of it, right? How do we come together as a community to really make a difference? And the other thing is, you know, we come from all different, you know, denominations. That's one of the beauties of the Barnabas Group. We have all different expressions of the Christian faith, but we're just one big community. I mean, it shocks me to hear that there's over 5,000 denominations, Christian denominations in the earth today. I mean, I couldn't even imagine how you come up with 5,000 different expressions of worship and interpretation of the Bible and whatever that separates us. But yet in the marketplace, we just like, hey, let's work together. We got to serve God. We've got problems. We got a community to reach. Let's roll up our sleeves and figure out a strategy and how do we get this done? So that's the energy. That's what I see. And I think maybe that's what Dr. Billy Graham saw and why he said what he said. But I think that's what's happening. And we, the Barnabas Group, I think are part of that movement, riding that wave. And, that's why I'm more excited than ever of what God's doing in Kansas City and in other parts of the country.
You know, I'm so glad you say that because I was absolutely astonished when when I adopted the mantle of business owner and entered the marketplace formally as a humble merchant, if you will, I found more support and connection than I ever had before. And I was raised in the church. And, you know, at the time, as a agnostic or atheist, it was, it was weird. It was frustrating, frankly, even then as an atheist, because it was like, what in the world? This is wild to me. Why is money such a more universal conversation supporter? And even to call it money is really unfair, because frankly, I have the whole reason we have the motto. I guess we'll get to a little bit more of that later. But I adopted my own personal kind of term, which was if you can't pay it back, pay it forward. And what was interesting, even before coming back to the faith, is that that motto was built on the notion that there was a lot of people that paid into me that I was never going to be able to return back. So the law of reciprocity didn't really apply there. It couldn't apply there because reciprocity is the notion that I'm going to give back to you, George, for what you've given to me. Well, if that can't work, then I need a new law. And mine was, well, I'll pay it forward. And then it gets even more interesting when you realize that you're even your salvation, you're in debt for that. Like, how much more so
should we
be? And so, you know, it's fascinating to me.
Indeed. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I love my church. I love the local church. God definitely raised up his church. He died and gave his life for it.
Right.
It's just a matter of, I think all of us in the body of Christ, we need to realize what's going on in the earth, what's going on in our communities, how are we making
it. Right.
We have to evaluate how we're doing, right? As business people, we evaluate, right? And I think we need to take a step back and say, what's working, what's not working, and what is God saying to do in this hour?
When I talked to a gentleman that was plugged into an organization, I'll probably avoid the name for the sake of anonymity, but he was plugged into an organization like UBN, like Barnabas Group. And it was fascinating to me because he admitted that, you know, he seemed like a good, strong Christian, but he admitted that he's like, you know, I don't go to church regularly because I feel more connected now to the faith through this business-related or Christian organization than I ever did in the church. And so it's just, I don't know. I guess what I'm saying here is I think you're kind of on to something. To your perspective, you know, and I still go to church regularly and I'm a big fan of it. I think it's an easy way for a lot of people to plug in a community if they're yearning for that at a bare minimum, right? Let alone any faith aspects. If you're looking for community and connection, that should be the place to go and an out of the box place for it. But I think to your point, there's probably some significant truth to the trends you're tracking.
Well, and one more thing I want to say about that. You know, the word church in the Bible in Greek is ekklesia. And you look at what ekklesia really means. I mean, we think the church is this thing with the four walls that we go to on Sunday. And what we do in the marketplace as Christians is some secular thing. There is no sacred design. If you really look at what ecclesia is all about, the work we do in the marketplace is just as much ecclesia as what we do in our church. So I view it as it's not church and business. It's two different expressions of ecclesia. I view the Barnabas Group Kansas City as just as much an expression of ecclesia as the church I attend. It's just a different expression of the Christian faith. And yeah, I actually feel more connected to the Barnabas Group and the people in that than I do to the people in my own church. Because again, we share a calling, we share a burden, and we're kind of all pulling in that direction. The people in church, you know, they share a different burden. And yeah, I'm part of that because I'm a part of my church. But nothing wrong with that. That if you feel more of a connection or affinity in a marketplace expression of ecclesia than a traditional church as a marketplace leader, I think that's fine. It just, you know, I love both. I'm a part of both. I give to both. It just, where are we called? Where are we going to be more fruitful? It goes back to that calling convergence. One of the reasons Bob Shank started the Barnabas Group, he felt a real burden, you know, going to church and seeing high-powered business leaders and being, and all they could do to serve was to be, you know, parking lot attendants or greeters or ushers. And they were all felt frustrated in their faith because they couldn't use their skills that they'd honed in the marketplace for the kingdom. And Bob said there had to be a better way because he saw ministries that were struggling because they didn't have that business expertise alongside them. Right. So our role model, I mean, the reason we're called the Barnabas Group, you look and study the life of Barnabas in the Bible. He came out of a family of priests. He was a Levite, but he was also a tent maker. And he realized, he saw kingdom potential in some up-and-coming people like Paul and John Mark, and invested his life, came alongside them as a messenger, an encourager, as a co-laborer, and helped them grow in their giftings so they could have a major impact in the kingdom. And, you know, I think there's opportunity for both expressions of ecclesia, and we just need to figure out what we're called.
So, and one thing, this might be a little bit of another curveball, but I just want to make sure, I'm not typically kind of much of a fact checker, but I'm trying to make sure. You said earlier, number one per capita homelessness, and America versus the world. Like, I want to dive in a little bit more.
Is that
a real stat where you heard that?
I believe that
we've got a homeless problem.
I read that somewhere. It surprised me as much as it did you. I could be wrong. I could have read it wrong, but, I mean, double check me on it, but I did recall reading that in a news article somewhere.
That's fair. I definitely think we're up there, probably for sure, and maybe Kansas City is the number one. I don't know. I'm not going to say that because I don't know that either. Fact check wise, I don't think, fortunately, we're yet the number one country with regards to homelessness.
No, I didn't say we're right. No, I was talking about America.
Right.
I know the mayor has said it's a major problem. It's one of the things he's trying to address. And by the way, I saw a great solution to this in Austin, Texas, a couple of years ago. There was, in Austin, Texas, they had raised up a large tent city of homeless people, and drugs were prevalent, trafficking, all kinds of problems. It was a mess. It was an eyesore in the community. Government was throwing money at it, tried several solutions, and none of them worked. And then the faith community rose up and said, hey, there's this abandoned RV park. We'd like to acquire it and start moving homeless people into this abandoned RV park. And the city said, go for it. And they bought some of these abandoned RVs. And then on some of the vacant land, tiny homes, you know, businesses would sponsor a tiny home. And this thing was like hundreds of acres. And it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. They now have a hydroponic garden, outdoor garden, jewelry manufacturing business, art studio, hair salon, movie theater. All this is in this community. It's neat. It's clean. People walk around. They talk to each other. They have a large church building there, of course, stores. But, I mean, there's life coming out of this community. And it's been so successful. The city has said, okay, here's another big tract of land. Go build another one. And it's an example of the faith community rising up and saying, we can move the needle. There's a better way we can solve these problems.
Well, and you're not wrong. So it's a fascinating thing. And I need to be careful not to get on a tangent, but we interviewed Matthew Entringer that runs a homeless based nonprofit organization. And it's fascinating to me, to your point about drugs and that's typically a lot of what keeps the homeless population down is because it's easier to. But what's interesting about drugs is we've had a lot of research on it. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I'm a scientist here, but in simplification, a lack of community is typically what leads to maximum drug use versus when you're connected with a strong community, even if you had. So a good example we have there is, you know, a lot of Vietnamese soldiers. American soldiers in the Vietnam War obviously had access to morphine. The big concern was they were going to come back and they were all going to be addicted to morphine. But what we found was once they were reconnected with their family, their friends, their community, they came off it pretty quickly. And we have examples of rats. This is where a lot of our research comes from, choosing drugs over regular water. It was cocaine-laced water over. But what was interesting was That was a scenario with an isolated rat, which rats are social creatures. When rats were given the same drug-laced water versus regular water, but were in a community, in like almost a rat wonderland, which you're essentially kind of describing the Christian church building and the community, the rats never chose the drug-laced water over the regular water. They made the healthy choice pretty consistently, which is fascinating. So full circle here, business is a community. Corporate is a community.
Sure.
Corporation comes from Latin corp. I'm going to mess this up horribly, but it comes from group think, right? And so it's a fascinating thing, the opportunity that the church and the business and the corporate body has available to it working together. Because you even gave an example there that I thought was beautiful, where there was a factory. There was an opportunity for job functions within the community of homeless.
There is, yeah.
So, yeah, anyway.
It's important. Community is so important, whether we're a homeless person or not, right? To all of us, community. For seniors, you know, they talk about, you know, one of the most important things is community and family and relationships. So whatever strand or walk of life you're in, community is so important. And again, we have to be intentional today to really be a part of a community. It's too easy to be in isolation and just find our community on Facebook or something like that. That's not what God intended.
No, I just don't think that's as genuine, right? Because people aren't, it's harder to be vulnerable on an open platform than it is in a one-on-one setting.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, I think back to my growing up, grew up in a Greek family. We just ate and talked a lot and talked loudly, right? And talked with our hands. And we just spent a lot of time breaking bread and eating and being together. And today, right, people just don't do that as much. Just gather around a meal and just laugh and talk and enjoy life. Yeah. It's something we've gotten away from.
So I'm starting to feel like we have a good wrap-up opportunity. I feel like that was a pretty good podcast, George. What do you think? Is there anything we might have missed in there? You want an opportunity to say something?
I think
something?
It was great. Those curveballs were pretty treacherous, but I think it was great.
Well, I didn't try. I think I appreciate you saying that. For me, it's just, I don't know, life's difficult. So hey, I want to find out how other people have navigated the curveballs.
I would say Joe Rogan doesn't have anything on you, Sam. You're doing a great job.
Oh, shoot. That's getting to make me cry. I really respect the guy for sure. So in wrap up, we have two questions. These are curveballs, George,
of course,
that we like to ask every guest. So the first one is, we have a motto over here. Built off of hardship, and even before I was a Christian, it's actually Isaac Newton and Greek-based, so don't judge me. But the saying is, if we have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants. Who's been a giant in your life, George, that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
Well, I've mentioned his name several times in this podcast, but Bob Shank, again, the incredible man of God, what a blessing to be able to know him, and I call him he's a dear friend, man of incredible Christian wisdom, a great kingdom leader, still is. So he would be one of the giants. And I've had some dear friends in my life that for many years, which are still there with me, and they're also giants for me. So, and my mom, she's not here on the earth right now to hear us. She's looking down from heaven, but she impacted my life.
The second one is, and this will be fun for you, if there's been a pithy saying or general cons. So this is, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. Penny saved is a penny earned. If there's been a saying that you found to be true, good opportunity for a Bible verse if you wanted, again and again and again in life, that's kind of helped guide some of your decisions, what would it be?
I'm going to mess this up. Let me think for a second.
You're okay.
If you want, it's something like, I may misquote this. If you want to go fast, go solo. But if you want to go far, go with a friend. Right?
Yes.
And it may not be the exact wording of that. But, you know, whether, first of all, my wife, my greatest friend, and I rejoice in our years of marriage together and look forward to our future years and my family, but and those that I've been able to do life with. So I would say that would be it.
I think you nailed it. The only variation I've heard is if you want to go fast, go solo. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah, that was it. Thank you.
Same thing.
Thank you for correcting me. You got it.
All right. Thank you so much, George, for having you on. It's been really blessing to have you here and to get to talk with you.
Thanks, Sam. It was great. It was fun. I enjoyed doing it. And if you ever want to do it again, let me know. But I love your podcast. Love what you're doing. Great service to the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.